Na 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 na. Hey! Gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey! Yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah! Podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey! Gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live, wall-to-wall New Orleans Saints football talk from our studios at the Meat House. This week, the New Orleans Saints, they go into Atlanta. They take care of business. They dispose of the Atlanta Falcons. They go 9-7. The problem is, in order for the Saints to make the playoffs, we need a little bit of help. And some help that I thought we should have gotten, but as it played out, we didn't get the help that we needed.
Hey, folks. All right, listen. I'm so not in the mood for you guys. You're blabbering on and on, okay? And it's enough, all right? It's enough. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, today's Monday, all right? So stop doing your stupid radio thing, and if you want to pick up where you left off tomorrow, at least it'll be Tuesday, all right? So just keep it down. Actually, don't keep it anything. Just stop, okay? Just stop doing what you're doing.
With me today, Craig Wright, Dell Mims, and, you know, listen, we're going to bring them in. We're going to get some opinions about the game, maybe a little bit of talk about the future, who's staying, who's going. Who helped the team, who, you know, overcame adversity. Golly, everybody did. But anyway, so grab a drink and sit back and relax, because for the next hour or so, we're going to be doing the New Orleans Saints football, BS and beer style. Gentlemen, welcome in. I'm going to start with you, Dale. The Saints took care of business with Atlanta. Maybe early, it was a little bit, as things started to kind of fall in place. But at the same time, I had the Rams 49ers game. And it seemed like that end of the equation, which the Saints needed the Rams to beat the 49ers. The Rams were 4-point favorites playing at home. And I thought that was going to be an easy part of the equation, because at one point it was 17-0. That all changed. How were you feeling about the game, about the potential for the Saints playoffs? Let's just call it the first half of the game there. Tell us about how you're feeling.
Listen, beating Atlanta was goal number one. Okay, that's the Super Bowl for me. All right. And I freaking hate the Falcons so much. So I'm glad, you know, we went in there, we handled our business. It's always hard when we have to rely on somebody else. We've been through this multiple times. and the Rams just, they break our heart once again. Matt Stafford. Yeah. I think he's starting to be overrated now.
yeah, man.
Because this was supposed to be a big upgrade when they did the trade for Goff and everything.
Put him over
like
the
that.
Top.
Yeah, yeah. He's really coming down to earth. I've got him in fantasy. Of course, we'll talk fantasy football. So so yeah, I've got him, and yeah, he let me down late in the season. So I was always kind of iffy going with this game, because you never know what 49ers team is going to show up. But, I mean, it was a hell of a comeback for the 49ers coming down from 17-0. But, yeah, I'm blaming the Rams for sure for that. But still, I'm going to keep my happiness because we beat the Falcons.
I was literally angry. And now I look at the Rams and I just want them not just to lose in the playoffs. I want them to get crushed, because I don't know what was going on. They seem to be playing – I don't want to act like they weren't dominating, because domination, Craig, was what happened when the 49ers came out of halftime and literally just ran the ball down the Rams' throat. Six-yard gains, 8-yard gains. It was they just embarrassed them in the second half. That's domination.
It's exactly what we said last week when we thought about how this game could go badly for us, is that the Niners can hit you in the mouth and the Rams are kind of soft. I mean, they're very talented. Very explosive, they're very fast, but you beat them up, and they got beat up. They jumped out to a big lead. I got to say, from an outside perspective, their game went to overtime and lasted a little bit longer. I think that they were score checking a little bit. And when they saw that the Cardinals didn't take care of business, they took their foot off the gas and kind of let it go.
I considered that. Now, I heard some conspiracy theories and I'm like, I don't know. And at some point in the second half, and the only reason I believe that could have been the case is simply because they were playing so well. But again, I have to remind myself, I'm not saying they got lucky in the first half, but they weren't just having their way with the 49ers. They got themselves in a position. And quite frankly, I was more focused on the Saints game. So I don't remember if it was turnovers or why the Rams got in a position to score those points in the first half. But I do recall it wasn't because they were just dominating the 49ers and running the ball down their throat.
Yeah, it's kind of like when a team like the Niners or like the way when the Saints are good this year, when they dominate somebody, it's physical and you beat them up and you have long possessions and, you know, it's clear to see. When the Rams jump out to big leads, it's a lot of big plays. It's a lot of, you know, blown coverages that land up, you know, where Stafford, you know, he might be declining, but he can throw the ball 70 yards on a row.
Right. So you got these until the end of the game.
Yeah, exactly. So you got these games where, yeah, they look really good on the final score because they, oh, you put up 35 points, but they really only had a handful of good plays that ended up going for huge gains. I don't know if that makes a lot of sense, but it's almost like it's a shell kind of an offense.
I agree with you. It's a fast offense. It's a explosive offense. And yeah, you know, when you play in average to below average teams, they can't keep up with your speed. When you play in teams that are tough and physical, if you're not making big plays, so you might end up beating somebody by 30 points, but it wasn't because you methodically just ran the ball down their throat and converted some third downs. It was because it's just, they couldn't keep up with your athletes. When you run into a team that can keep up with your athletes, now all of a sudden they seemed incapable of putting drives together. Everything had to be big plays or nothing.
Well, here's the problem. They couldn't run the ball. Really look at it, like Sony Michel had 21 carries, 43 yards. You know, that's terrible. We had that Akers out there. Akers just, you know, shattered his Achilles like in the training camp, and he's playing. He's playing snaps all of a sudden.
And every time they dropped back, the pressure was overwhelming. The Rams could not block. The Rams couldn't block the 49ers front four. Yeah. I mean, at some point, you know, you can blame Stafford and, you know, listen, I was the first one to start doing like, you know, Stafford, he's the same guy at Detroit because I was angry. But if I'm being fair, tell me what quarterback can just be not just harassed, but just hit on almost every play, have people in his face almost every play.
Credit where it's due. Credit where it's due. I mean, the Niners, this wasn't the only game they had to win to get into the playoffs. I mean, there's a reason they were in this situation. They have a good defense. They're a physical team. They can score points on offense, and their defense can get after you. I mean, they won, what, 8 or 9 other games other than this one. So it's not like the Rams, you know, blew it against Jacksonville to ruin their playoff chances. They were up against a good team.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, a little sneaky one. They're a good team. There's a reason they're in. They absolutely deserve to be in the playoffs right now. But the Rams know they should be kicked out of the NFL, but the Niners, they deserve it.
How much more do you hate the Rams now?
I lived in Los Angeles for most of my adult life. I got to explain to you, I can't hate them anymore.
It's not possible. I remember I lived in LA for 11 years, and I remember just sitting at sports bars, just listening to the guys next to me. And this was back during, remember when LSU and USC split a national championship? And just
no,
listen,
because we won the championship. Right. And USC just said they split
it. Yeah, well, they were staking claim to it and talking about how much tougher their schedule was. And I was like, nonsense. I'm going to get in a bar fight if I speak up against this. And it just drove me crazy. So
it's a Raiders town anyway.
Let me talk a little bit perspective here, because correct me if I'm wrong. The 49ers won 10 games, right? The Saints won 9 games. The Saints, with the adversity that they faced, when you look at the 49ers offense, you know, is it Deebo Samuels? They have a good physical offensive line. You know, a guy that a quarterback, I mean, he's not a top 10 guy, but he's probably in that next level. Wouldn't you agree? 10 to 15.
Yeah. He can get the job done. Yeah. If he's your guy going into the season, I mean, he's not going to be the reason you're not a good team.
And Kittle. And there's probably tons of people I'm missing. And I asked myself, I mean, the Saints, but I'm not going to get into the woulda, coulda, shoulda, but the Saints won one game less with the problems and issues. I don't know any other way to say it, with the COVID issues, with the coaching COVID issues, with the injuries, with the being relocated for a month because of a hurricane. It starts making you wonder, like, I don't know how they managed to do that. Is Sean Payton, I'll start with you, Dale, Sean Payton, that just that much better a coach?
It's amazing. We slashed, what, $100 million off the cap by cutting people, trading them, all that kind of stuff. I mean, Sean Payton is really a next level coach. I do remember when Payton was talking about the new hires of other coaches, and he was saying how, you know, pretty much those are bad hires and it's going to make his job a lot easier. And I mean, hey, the guy called it from the beginning. And if he can work this kind of miracle with this kind of talent, I mean, once we fix this stuff, man, we're going to be right back to the top.
So Craig, and everything that I just said to Dale, but let me throw a caveat on there. And I bear with me as I scan through this. We played the Buccaneers twice. We played the Cowboys division champs, Buccaneers division champs, and I think they won 13 games. We played the Bills. We played the Eagles. That's a playoff team last time I looked. The Titans, they were number one seed in AFC last time I looked. Let's see. No, not them. Never mind. Nope.
Patriots. Are they a playoff team? Yeah.
They're a playoff team as well. Green Bay, there's another playoff team.
My point is
that this team did not play a cupcake schedule that would make you say, well, hey, I mean, yeah, you can't compare them to 49ers. 49ers played the NFC West, and, you know, they played a very grueling schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if I can kind of frame the question a little bit differently and hear me out. So we're kind of looking at it of how did we manage to win 9 games with everything that happened to us? And if you kind of tweak that and you think about, if all that didn't happen to us, how many games would this team have won? This team is so deep and so talented, and the defense is so scary good, and the coaching is so good, and the culture is so dedicated to winning. And we have such a good situation that's what it took to keep us out of the playoffs. It took a hurricane and multiple COVID games and the most horrific rash of injuries I've ever seen as a fan.
Yeah, NFL and record.
We still almost got there. We were an overtime game away from the playoffs with all of that. This is what I've been saying. This team could have been special.
Yeah. I can't get on board with the special thing because I just look at the talent on offense. And even if we were healthy, now I'm not saying with Michael Thomas, but without Michael Thomas, which never seemed okay. I guess they teased us with it for several games into the season. The point is he never played a down. It's not like he played and got hurt. So without him, I just look at the offense, and outside of Kamara, I don't know what was special about our offense. Okay, maybe I'm kind of overlooking the offensive line, and you have two guys who are all pros at tackles. You have a outstanding, although he hasn't gotten accolades per se, in McCoy at center. You're talking about three of the five. Then you have, hell, you know
Pete,
what?
We get
Pete. Pete is a Pro Bowler. And, you know, listen, I mean, he gets a lot of flack because when he messes up, and that's a bad way to say it, not messes up, when he fails.
When he doesn't succeed.
He does it in grandiose fashion, right?
Yeah, it's obvious.
It's the whiff that he just literally just misses a guy and he hits the quarterback.
But at what point face, now, though.
We all like, I know, now we're over here like, golly, man, boy, we wish you had Pete back when you got rookies on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that on paper and three of the five are Pro Bowlers. McCoy's gonna be soon. He probably deserves it. And the only question mark was a first round pick. I mean, yeah, the pieces are all there. I'm not saying the offense is gonna be one of these like the 2011 juggernaut that scores 40 points a game, but it was absolutely enough to win multiple more games than we did if they're healthy. And a couple of more games is all of a sudden an 11 win team, and you're looking at playoff games.
Right. Go ahead, Dale.
The special thing doesn't make sense, but we didn't struggle very much against good teams. Our struggles came against the bad teams. And so the bad teams don't make the playoffs. So therefore we could have just ran the table and won a Super Bowl with Trevor freaking.
Okay. I see where you're going. I see where you're going. Mr. Optimism. I just can't buy into that because I just look at the talent and I use this. This is my logic. If we could win a Super Bowl, and I'm pretty sure you being hyperbolic, you were kind of saying that in jest. if you can win the Super Bowl with this offensive roster, then that means talent means nothing. That means, why are you paying Armstead? Why are you paying Ramchek? Just, you know, get yourself a solid center and a good running back.
You mean with what the pieces we had left at the end?
Yes. So just throw whatever on the field. You know, you need a really good defense to make this formula work. Now, yes, let's keep that in mind.
Gotta have a good defense.
And we have that. But having said that, okay, listen, I look at these offensive players that we had left at the end of the season, and I would even make the argument, if you want to compare them to the best of the best, even if we had Michael Thomas, could you really compare our wide receiving group against some of the best teams in the league? And I'm not sure if you could. Now, I'm going to contradict myself, because next year, Michael Thomas tweeted after the game, and I had it here somewhere, and he tweeted, who dat? He was obviously excited about the Saints win, and what's going on. I mean, I know it's coming subtle, back. But that means to me that the guy's saying, hey, man, I'm supporting my team.
Bought in. He's all in.
If you have this guy, and you have at the bottom of the wide receiving group, you have Tre'Quan Smith, you have Callaway, and here's the guy that's like, is Harris. Harris is a two. I don't want to call him a one, but because of his size and his propensity to get dinged up, he's really kind of down there with those three guys. So if
he's kind of more of a Z. He's kind of more of a little slot guy that you put in motion, get him matched up on people.
However you want to define it, what I'm looking at is just general breakdown. If you have Michael Thomas and you add a number two, then all of a sudden we don't go into three, four, five, all that stuff, but whoever is in the game is Harris, Tre'Quan Smith, and Callaway. I just said some stuff negative about the receivers, but if they bring that group in, and whoever they bring in at number two, I don't know. And I don't know who I could name for you guys to say,
Ohio State we could name.
If you want to go rookie, you bring in one of those guys, and all of a sudden I go from, man, this wide receiver group ain't good enough
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. If those are your top three, you're in trouble. If they're your bottom three, you are looking good.
Nice team.
Same ingredients, different order.
Right. And so I'm excited about that. I have a little bit more confidence that, okay, so Michael Thomas, let's talk real quick. He texts that, and all of a sudden I go from being negative. Yes, there, show that flex. I go from being negative to saying, man, can you imagine what a year off the dude? Listen, of all the drama and all that stuff, the guy's a dedicated athlete. I'm trying to get to the point where, can you imagine that he's going to walk into the room just yoked, his arm? He's going to look like a freaking tight end. I can imagine it already. The team is probably going to say, Mike, you got to lose, you know, 5 to 7 to 10 pounds. Guy, you're just too thick to play wide receiver. You know, that's what I'm expecting from him.
Well, he's always been a hard worker in practice and everything like that. So I can definitely see him being that guy that may overtrain. I heard a lot about that from LSU this season too. Guys overtraining because this is what they know. All they know is work. So Mike Thomas is definitely one of those guys.
Okay, so new receiving group. Don't know who we'd insert as that number two guy, but if we insert somebody who's a baller, our wide receiving group goes from like, oh God, to like, that's a nice group.
And so, specifically a certain kind of receiver, right? Is like we're saying, Michael Thomas is a possession guy, that he's got the best hands in the league. He gets first downs like it's his job. I mean, as soon as you get someone who can get a little bit deeper down the field, maybe, especially now that we're not kind of hamstrung by an incredibly accurate Hall of Famer that can't throw the ball very far. Once we have a quarterback that can stretch the field a little bit, guys like Tre'Quan Smith become more valuable, Deontay Harris, and a better version of those. If you draft somebody who can get down the field in a hurry, and you get somebody like Michael Thomas facing single coverages on third down, it's going to eat people up.
And we saw that. We saw that when Jameis Winston was playing. And again, I didn't do a very good job of figuring out which direction we were going to take the show. But, Dale, let's go in this direction. I know everybody wants Wilson. Or Rodgers, but quite frankly, if we can get this offensive line healthy, which again, there's probably going to be some revamping, and we talked about a wide receiver in the first round. I know people think this is a running joke, but it would not surprise me one bit to see an offensive lineman drafted in the first round. And quite frankly, as much as I want to see that receiver, I'd shake my head because it's kind of boring, but be like, hey, man, that's how we won as many games as we did. It wasn't because of receivers. It wasn't because you saw as soon as we lost those receivers, Alvin Kamara is a human. Once you put him in a place where there's nobody blocking for him, he wasn't this amazing guy that just made 10 people, you know, Barry Sanders. And again, now it sounds like I'm beating up on Kamara. I'm making the point. When he had blocking, he takes advantage of it. When there's no blocking, so give me the blocking. Give me a receiver in the second round or give me that free agent wide receiver. But back to the point, Jameis Winston, to me, he seems like the only logical answer. And I'll start with Craig. Craig, if the Saints, even if this was a quarterback draft, you can't draft a rookie. I mean, how many rookies come in and do something? You would waste this defense by the time 3 years passed.
Yeah.
And you bring 100%. That rookie in and get him ready to go. The defense would be completely different.
Yeah, and I mean, in a good draft, you get one or two guys that are ready to play come out of college. I mean, Joe Burrow, I guess, was taking care of business.
And he didn't have a great rookie year.
He's the best example I could come up with off the top of my head. For every one of those, you have a Trey Lance and Trevor Lawrence and all these guys that don't put it together right away. And you have a ticking clock with guys like Cameron Jordan and DeMario Davis and Malcolm Jenkins and some of these contracts on defense when we have to start paying guys like Davenport. And Onyemata is going to come back up again. I think that the obvious answer for me is Jameis. I think the injury, it's bad for us this year, but it helps his price tag. We know what he is in the building, and probably a lot of other teams don't. I don't think Wilson or Rodgers were ever realistic options. Obviously, the best thing we can do is go with Ian Book and just run the table with that.
Stop it. Stop it. We, you know,
Jameis is my guy. I'm putting all my chips in the Jameis Winston pile. I think he can be a really special player with this offense and this team.
Dale, you can make the argument that the best thing that happened to Jameis was getting injured against the Buccaneers, because that's right about where the wheels fell off the wagon. And I don't know if we'd be talking about him this finally, because listen, while he did a lot of good things, he also did some things that are like, I didn't care for his short and intermediate passing game. Having said that, he wasn't working with a great wide receiver group. But anyway, the best thing that could have happened to him is keeping his value for now, because I don't know. And, you know, this is going to lead to me and Craig getting into a subject that I'm trying to save a little bit.
Okay.
I do believe that Taysom Hill was more suited to play with the offense that we had in the second half of the season, late in the season, last five games of the season, than he would have been. I think he would be more effective in those five games than Winston would have been. If our offense was set up normally with the right players and just occasional injuries that you're accustomed to, Jameis is the better quarterback. So I think the best thing that could have happened to him is, again, not to wish injury on the guy, but him getting injured was the right time. Because could you imagine how it would have looked having Jameis back there with no offensive line, no receivers? It wouldn't have been pretty.
He probably would have ran him out of town for sure. But if you remember, like in our text group, man, before the season started, I thought, yo, we should go ahead and start Taysom because we don't have weapons. And I don't want to evaluate Jameis Winston with no weapons. I thought it was unfair.
I agree.
So he ended up looking a lot better than I thought he would. And to me, listen, if I'm his age, there's no way I'm signing another one-year deal. There's no way. I did it twice. And then, you know, my guy got hurt. There's no way he signed another one-year deal. So if I'm him, I'm signing, you know, I'm thinking like a $20, $25 million a year kind of deal, at least 3 years, need some kind of stability in his life. That's what he would need.
So I completely agree with you. Now, having said that, I don't agree with he's going to do what he can. Having said that, I believe the Saints saw enough to know what they have in Winston. They know what they have in leadership. They know what they have in the locker room. They know what they have on the football field. And they have to have at least an idea, vision of what he can be with better skill players around him. Having said that, yeah, I mean, listen, you start going down the list of what guys are making. We just talked about some mid-tier guys who they make 20, 22 million. 20 million is a bargain for a quarterback. And Jameis Winston in our offense is a starting quarterback. So it is my belief, Craig, that he's going to get, somewhere around 20. It won't be 25, but I think he'll be in the low 20s. And the key to it is just guaranteed money. Like, give the man a five-year it is so funny that I'm talking about, give the man a cheap contract, 5 years, $100 million. You know,
yeah, real cheap stuff.
Yeah, but that's what you – nowadays, that is a cheap contract.
I mean, it's the going rate now, you know? Yeah. And it's on the low side of the going rate.
And so as long as his guaranteed money is not high, you give him a five-year contract, you're pretty much in the driver's seat if he fails. Or, you know, give him $30 million guaranteed, which means one season and a couple of games into his next season, then he's paid off in guaranteed money. You can cut him when you want to. There is nobody who's going to come in and replace him next year. I get that we want Rodgers, we want Wilson. I'm not convinced that, listen, they're that good. Their teams are not going to let them get away. So anyway, take it from there.
For what it would take to pry one of those guys away, yeah, it would gut the team that you have. And then all of a sudden having those guys don't make you good enough anyway.
Right.
The Saints' best chance of being competitive next year is with Jameis Winston. From a salary perspective, from a time in the system perspective, we know how his chemistry is with the team. If you saw in the Atlanta game when he was on the sideline, everybody's getting hyped around him, that he's in the middle of everything. Guys like to play with him. Yeah, he's one of the guys. He's really adopted the culture down here. He's bought into it. The guys have bought into him. If we can keep that price tag down and somebody like Chicago or something crazy doesn't come out of nowhere and throw money at him, I mean, that it's the slam dunk for me.
Price tag is something that I think everybody's going to have to get used to, because listen, Carson Wentz is averaging like $32 million a year. Okay. Like this is the market. Like,
Everybody has to bring that name up, man.
He really wanted to go golfing this week.
Yeah, he's like, man, I got stuff to do next weekend. I got a sock drawer that needs sorting.
I had a tea time.
Yeah.
So that's the market, though, that we're looking at.
No, it's the market. It is what's going. And again, it's the market for average to below average quarterbacks. I do believe that Jameis Winston can be more than that. Now,
right.
I don't know if he'll ever get to the top of his game, like top five quarterback, but what I think we've seen is that if we're talking right now, we're not talking 5 years from now, we're talking next 3 year window, let's say, with this defense, the offense in general has a lot of good pieces. We're just missing some skill playmakers. If we can get those playmakers, and again, we already talked about it, receiver, what do we need? One receiver, a tight end. You know, I do believe we need another running back. I love Mark Ingram, sure. But at the end of the day, it tore me up to see Kamara running the ball in the fourth quarter just to burn the clock out. It was every time he got handed the ball, I just kind of cringed. We need another running back. You can get one of those in the third or fourth round. Running backs are so devalued nowadays. Just get somebody to come in there and take some of that load off of, you know, and I wasn't really impressed with Tony Jones Jr. I think we bring in a guy, Mark Ingram, Kamara. We looking at a team that can compete for not just a playoff spot. I'm not going to go Super Bowl yet, but I think a defense like that with an offensive line that should be very solid, Kamara, Michael Thomas, Jameis Winston with another year under his belt, with a couple of more skilled players, I think you're talking about somebody who can threaten. I really do, and I'm not trying to be a homer. I don't think that's unrealistic at all.
Man, there's a veteran wide receiver out there right now that we can just get, you know?
Okay, you can keep us in suspense?
I'm talking about AB, you know?
Oh, God, yeah, and he's right there. I bet we could even get him pretty cheap. This may explain the whore-like nature of my pathetic existence, but if I heard the Saints were in talks with him and signed him to – you know, 1 year deal, you know,
I'm fine with it.
Yeah. I'd be like, yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Man. Like, I'm like, yeah, I ain't got to live with them. You know, it's just,
nah, man, it's fine. Shit.
I wouldn't even hesitate. So
I would be happy about it. I would have called one of you guys. Hey, y'all hear about AB? Let's do it.
Right.
All right.
It's like you said, I mean, with our defense this year, we had an abysmal offense. I mean, there's no other way to put it. This was a bad offensive football team this year. You know, bottom of the league and just about everything. and we won 9 games, and we were in a couple more of them that we could have, should have, would have won.
Top 7 overall defense when you're looking at yards. Like,
but how 7. And how much better would it have been if they weren't constantly on the field because of an incompetent offense giving the ball away on 3 and outs constantly?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That was my biggest concern in many of the games when I'd say, how are we going to score points? Because it's not just about scoring points. It's not, how do we get a first down so that we're not just giving the ball right back to them? And, well, you know, listen, well, the last game of the week, we had our we reunited with Morstead. And, listen, we have a punter now that rivals everything that Morstead did. I mean, the guy was incredible, and this team really needed that. And I think we don't often give enough, I don't know if I'm saying it right, enough credit or
punters right people credit too.
For, yeah, yeah. I mean, he was huge for this team. Okay, look, I have our schedule for next year. Obviously not the dates.
Opponents.
But, the opponents. And let's start off on the road. Now, the new system is, because there's an odd number of games on opposing years, the NFC gets the home or the extra home game. Next year, the AFC gets the extra home game. This in 2001, I guess this season, the AFC got the extra game. Now, the Saints, they played a bunch of games on the road anyway, but next year they get the extra home game. So, of course, in our division, you got the Panthers, you got Atlanta, and you got the Buccaneers. Then we play Arizona on the road. We play San Francisco on the road. We play Cleveland on the road. We play Pittsburgh on the road. And we play for the third year in a row, the dreaded Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, I'm tired of seeing them.
Tired of it. Tired. Should we just go ahead and chalk that up? I'm going to put a line through this one right here. Just give the loss.
Just throw an L on there and just skip that week.
Yeah, just skip that one. I mean, if we win it, then it was like, oh, man, that's extra. You know, we'll be like
maybe have a different quarterback situation. Yeah. I don't know.
We'll be like Carson Wentz, man. We just schedule like, some debutante ball or something that weekend and pretend it didn't happen. All right, the home games. Now, we get to do the same thing, obviously, with the Rams. I'm sorry, not the Rams, but the Buccaneers, the Panthers, and the Falcons. Then we play the Rams. And I'm mad about that. I want them to kick the teeth out of the Rams for all kinds of different reasons. Dale, you pointed out how you hate Atlanta, and don't hate me for this. I've never had any real disdain for Atlanta because, in my opinion, Atlanta's never really been that big of a, and most of my, I was born and raised in Louisiana. Then I moved away in the military, and I kind of missed that whole thing about the rivalry and the impact of it. I hate the Rams. I hate the 49ers, but the Rams, after what just happened on Sunday, I want an opportunity to kick their teeth in like the 49ers did. We also have Seattle. We play Baltimore at home. We play Cincinnati at home. Now, that is going to be interesting.
Oh, it's going to be fun.
Yes. And now, who won the Chargers-Raiders game on Sunday night? The nil it tire. Okay, so the Raiders won. So then we're playing the Raiders. And then we're playing Minnesota at home. So I don't know, man. I'd have to look at it, but I see a more favorable schedule than I did this year, than when we went over the schedule. Pittsburgh's not going to be the same team. I don't know who's their quarterback going to be. Maybe Jameis Winston.
I mean, they're not an excellent team this year.
No, that's what I'm saying. I mean, now they should be not quite as good.
They're a lot like the Saints, though, because
Pittsburgh,
they still made the playoffs or whatever, and they're not a good team.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Arizona is a Jekyll and Hyde kind of team. San Francisco's a tough, just because of how hard they play. That's going to be a tough game. Philadelphia, just whatever it is, it's a bad matchup for us.
Bad matchup.
The Rams, after what I saw, I think that we can. We'll play them well. Seattle, I'm not concerned about. Baltimore, golly, man, that's an interesting game. Cincinnati's my new, it always has been, is my number two team because it was like another lovable loser. But now with Burrows and Chase, that's going to be my team in the playoffs.
Even with them stealing the Who Day chance?
You know what?
Sounded like a bunch of idiots.
Yeah, that is kind of stupid. And they'll swear up and down. They'll swear up and down. A lot of Cincinnati fans around here that they originated it. And so I looked all that stuff up. And
they don't have Google up there, huh?
No, it's it's very questionable. So anyway, so there's the schedule for next season. I think that, I don't look at it, at least on the surface, as difficult as this year's schedule was, but every year it changes, right? You know, one team's like, ah, they all right, and they turned out to be really good, or vice versa. So any thoughts on the schedule, gentlemen?
Yeah, the NFC West this year kind of peaked with a lot of contracts are and a lot of ages, a lot of players on like the Rams. The Cardinals were kind of up and coming, but even they have a lot of kind of pieces that may not be with the team next year. The Niners are going to be good, but the NFC West isn't going to be the same group it was this year. So even that looking like that's the tough part of our schedule, I think even that's a little bit softer and going into the next season than it will be this one. The schedule looks better next season than it did this one. I kind of wish we had an extra road game for whatever reason.
Yes.
It's absurd. We used to have this dome field advantage, and now every week I'm hoping we're on the road.
So
yep, agreed.
I want to bring up a particular guy, but I hate to just bring him up because I only have a couple of comments. So what I'm going to do is bring up the draft class as a whole. And you're talking about Turner, who he showed flashes. A little concerned about, injuries. And, keep getting injured. And
he flashed in one game.
He did. Actually, it was the first game he came back from injury.
It was the second game of the season.
Carolina.
He
flashed. And then we didn't really see much. I'm trying to be optimistic, Craig. Don't do that to me. Don't do that.
Physically, he's a freak. He's very much in – he's not obviously not as big and strong as your guy Davenport, but he's very much in that kind of mold where
right.
if he puts it together, he can wreck things.
The disturbing thing about it is now that the season's played out, I'm hearing a lot more. I heard little things, but I didn't take it to heart. But that he was banged up in college constantly too, and it's like a little disheartening – where I hope, like Ruiz, he hits the weight room, comes back a tougher guy. You know, I don't know if it works that way. We've learned from some players that just their ligaments don't hold up in NFL like a Cam Jordan does. But whatever Cam Jordan's doing, maybe we can, get blood samples, DNA samples, and do something to pass along. And clone
Cam Jordan.
Perfect. Yes. So then next, Werner, linebacker. I think another outstanding pick. The only struggles that he had, and again, you would expect from a rookie, is in pass coverage. And he wasn't horrible. He wasn't, I won't be able to remember the linebacker from Clemson that we drafted in the first round. He wasn't
Stephon Anthony.
Bad. Yeah, Stephon Anthony bad, yes. But he had a super low. I was listening, I believe it was WWL point out it is like 1.something% missed tackle rate or something. Outstanding. Once he gets a hold of you, you're going down, unlike Zach Bond, who I like, who I think has a future. Okay.
Werner, he wasn't a liability, and that's all you can kind of hope for in a rookie, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't Quan Alexander, which is usually who he was switching with.
Well, that was his whole problem for the year, Quan Alexander.
His whole problem was not being Quan Alexander, because Quan had a fantastic year. He was all over the place. Well, so, yeah, when you're comparing the two, he's not going to look as great, but he wasn't the problem.
Yeah, the expectation I have is going forward, we'll probably see. I expect Kawan to resign. He just has too much injury history to get big money, and he's going to stay with the Saints. Yeah. And I see that being like a two-headed monster. You have guy on running down, and not even to suggest. Now, Kawan is not the run stopper. He is in pass defense, but it kind of works out perfect is that you can take some wear and tear off of him and let him play on third downs and kind of be your tight end stopper and play in pass coverage. And let Werner come in there and take some of that beating and be a tackling machine. So that's what I expect. Now, the reason I brought this subject up is Paulson Adebo.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking about a guy who's a third round pick who took his lumps like any rookie quarterback cornerback will. But the one thing that just fascinates me every time I see him play is how he constantly has his head back looking for the ball. Now, has he given up some plays? You can make the argument that he's the guy that cost us the Atlanta game, the first Atlanta game, with that giving up that big play. Having said that, you could see the improvement as the season went on. And I don't feel like, and maybe you guys can correct me, I don't feel like he hit like that rookie wall. I didn't remember him disappearing or getting beat up quite a bit during a certain part of the season before he got his feet back under him. So, you talking about between him and Lattimore, you talking about two cornerbacks, high-level cornerbacks, for the next at least 3 or 4 years.
Well, don't forget Roby, too. Now, we traded for him.
I don't know if he'll be back. Because of how his salary cap works out, and I don't know if the Saints will be able to keep him. And I don't have anything to lead me to believe that other than just a feeling. Thoughts on that?
I got to look at his contract. Like I really thought he was under contract for a couple of
years. No, he is. But what the Saints did is when they traded for him, they had Houston eat a lot of his salary and then moved money to next year. So I think like this year his hit was, and I can't remember, but it was very moderate. But so next year,
$9.5 million hit next year.
Yeah, I think we have an escape clause on next season for him. But it doesn't necessarily
All his guaranteed money's paid. So the point is, it's really going to be mostly salary, which also means that they could just rework the deal. Yeah. But as it stands right now, I think his hit this year, again, I have no idea, but I know it was something very low. It might have been like $1 million.
Yeah, it's like $1 million.
And then next year, it's going to be real low, up to like 10 or 12 or something.
$9.5 million next year.
Okay. So yeah. you got it in front of you there.
Yeah.
So $10 million next year. But because of all the guaranteed money's already been absorbed, we can take that and extend it out and, you know, do the things Saints do with some ghost years or maybe just sign them to an extension, you know, say, hey, make that first year just down to $2 million and then get them a raise here down the road.
Yeah, they're saying that 22 is the potential out for it because it's zero cap hit if we release them. So yeah, I see what you're saying.
I didn't say that. I wouldn't be surprised if we try to keep them. You don't want to just have two corners to rely on. Everybody knows they're made of glass. One of them's going to get hurt. 30
years old. That's right.
Yeah, right, and have him in that position where he's an older guy. He doesn't have to start. The Saints can work it out where, you know, he might be willing to take a bit of a pay cut or somehow say you can get that money in a different way. But I think we have to slice off. And I'm not saying this in a way because I'm so sick of talking about salary cap, because I understand how it works, but sometimes it don't make sense to me. It's just like, I mean, I've heard people just say it don't mean nothing. And I look and I say, come on, man. I mean, but it really seems like it don't mean anything. So the Saints could rework it, restructure it, give them a couple of extra years, stretch it out, keep them next year. But we do have to cut like $60 million in cap space.
Right.
So how we go about doing that? And listen, after cutting, what, $120 million last year?
It's child's play now.
Yeah, child's play, man. We just
we have the kids table now.
I'm sure Loomis will find that in the seat cushions of his car, yeah. You know. I'm not really worried about it. But I do think that there'll be some – let's talk about it now. Let's talk about Teron Armstead. I know early in the season we did kind of talk about it, and I think my feelings are changing because he's missed even more time now. And how do you pay a guy what he's worth? He is worth that when he's healthy, but he's just not healthy, Craig. I mean, you can't keep paying a guy that kind of money, and he's a warrior. He'll play injured. I just don't know how you do it. And do you think at 30, I believe he's 30. He's not old. I mean, I get he's in the
30 in lineman years is getting up there.
So
from experience,
I feel you, man. I feel you. So I'm not going to contradict you there. So maybe does he feel like he can get a couple more years out of this? Does he take a lower contract to stay with the Saints? At some point, if I'm the Saints, I'm going to say to him, Craig, I'm going to say, look, man, we got to have a viable backup for you, and we need some of that money to hire him. So we can't give you that.
Yeah, I think the only way that he's on the team next year is if we can restructure a little bit, because I mean, that my go-to phrase is that the best ability is availability. And when he plays, he's the best left tackle in football, arguably, or top two, three, four, but he doesn't always play. And this is not a new development. He's had an injury history for the last half decade. And I think you have to take that into account. That when you play, you're fantastic. But if you want to be on this team, and we want you on this team, he's a good part of the culture. He's very bought into everything we do here. But you gotta help us out in the pocketbook.
Yeah.
If I'm reading this correctly, though, if we get rid of him, it's gonna be a $13 million cap hit.
Yes, you are reading it correctly.
So, I mean, $13 million to get out of the room and go play for somebody else, like. That's going to be a hard pill to swallow, man.
That's where I think he gets restructured. I think that he's on the team next year, but I think we're changing something.
Okay. So it's not that we had the same debate like 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago. And the thing about it is nothing you just said, Dale, is something I didn't know. But boy, you go the second half of the season and he doesn't get on the field, and you just start saying, should we go in a different direction? I agree with you. I don't know how they're going to – let's just put it this way. It's going to be interesting to watch that situation develop.
Absolutely.
How about that?
Absolutely.
So, all right. So while we're speaking on the offensive line, let's talk about our guy Ruiz. Obviously, he's struggled again this year. I said during the game, I said, man, the guy just looks too small. And I'm like, yeah, but you know what? I know a lot of offensive linemen, like, guards in particular, they built like fireplugs. They're not 6'4". They're 6'1", you know, maybe 6'2". And then I started thinking, is it really about his size? Or Craig would probably be the best one to address this. Maybe he's just not like, does he need to hit the weight room? Because my whole point in this is I don't know if you can go into next year assuming that he's going to be a better player. I think that at this point you have to go into it saying we need to fill that liability. And if he improves, then you have two good players. You can't, Craig, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And just to be clear, at no point does anything I'm about to say indicate that I think we should just cut him or trade him.
Oh, no. It wasn't my suggestion either.
No, I know. We've talked about this before. You got to keep him around to develop, but there's no way you don't address the position as well. You bring in somebody else and let him compete for it. Because it's not as simple as getting in the weight room or gaining some weight, or he'd have done it already. You know, he's got a lot of people who are paid a lot of money to make sure that his body is exactly tuned to what his job is. And you do want, like you were saying, you want your guards to be a little bit shorter, a little bit quicker, turn the page. And I think that he might have leaned into that whole, you know, his whole drafting is that he's very quick. He can get around the corner. He can get into space. So he doesn't bulldoze people because that's not what he's good at. And it's hard to kind of become good at something else. I mean, it's not impossible. Andrews Pete had almost the exact same issue about that. He wasn't very physical. He wasn't really strong. And now we know him to be a really strong guy in the running game.
He's a mauler.
Digging people out. Yeah, he's a mauler now. So it's not that, you know, there's no hope for him, but he's not being given the best chance to succeed right now, I don't think.
Well, I'm gonna put you and Craig against one another, because here's the question, and I'm gonna start off with Dale. Is Ruiz smaller guy, maybe not as strong? That was my supposition. He played center. McCoy played guard. Dale suggested, and like at first, I'm kind of like, man, do you want to take away from one position that's, you know, if 1-5, man, McCoy's a 5 at center. Do you want to take him and move him to guard where he might be a 4? And then Ruiz is just a 3. And when you add those numbers up, you actually get a total less situation. But would he not be better served? What if you put him at center? I mean, he played a little bit so far this year. Is he not a better center where he doesn't have a man lined up directly over him all the time? Dale, start and tell Craig how he's wrong with what he's about to say.
Oh, well, first, you know, Ruiz had just fell down again. So
we wanted
to get that out the way. And that's my number one thing. We can't have this guy to keep pulling around and falling down on his face. So,
saw him do that once this week, but you saw him do it. So we're going to talk about it a little bit, right? You didn't see every time that he got to second level and helped spring Kamara for a 20-yard run, but you saw the time that he tripped coming around the center. Hell, I've tripped coming around the center before. It happens. It is a part of the, you're in a tight area.
Do we need dance classes or something?
We talked about lifting weights. Craig, could we just put him in a ballet class or something?
Yeah, put him in ballet.
Put him in your class so that while you're over there doing twinkle toes and stuff, man.
Yeah, I don't think that's his problem. I think a lot of it is cerebral. It's in between his ears. He's, you know, playing a different position. It's not an excuse. He wasn't good enough to play that position. He shouldn't be in that situation. But not an excuse, but an explanation on the why there is this learning curve. And yeah, it's a lot like what we were saying about Pete earlier. When he screws up or when he doesn't succeed, you see it. You notice it. So you talk about it for a week. Oh, did you see him trip and pull down? If he had a stretch where Ruiz picked up a blitzing linebacker and then he got to the D tackle out of the hole for a 3 or 4 yard run, and then he gets to linebacker on a big Kamara run, and the play after that, he whiffs on a run and we get blown up in the backfield. Which player y'all going to talk about on your podcast?
Whoa, y'all, you got a mouse in your pocket?
All y'all, all the accompanying y'alls in this room. It just shows up more. If that's the old adage for offensive line, you don't notice them until they screw up, until they get called for holding.
Or don't succeed. Or was it?
If they don't, you don't know who they are until they fail to succeed.
Yeah, that's the one.
Once an offensive tackle gets beat around the corner, oh, who was that? Oh, that was Young or Throckmorton or so. Oh, yeah, it's that guy. But every time you see Kamara get sprung, oh, look at Kamara. Look at how good at football. Look at how patient he is in that run. Not talking at all about how the offensive line moved line.
Lord, Dale, I shouldn't even got him started, man. You get these damn offensive linemen talking about
an example of the hypocrisy against the offensive line that is shown in the sports media world. You know what? Now I hope we draft an lineman in the first round.
Yeah, just to irritate everybody.
Just to irritate all y'all.
All right. So I'm going to end with this. Who's going? We talked about Armstead and that money, we got to keep them. Somebody got to go. Who's it going to be? Name your most likely candidate to be escorted out the building, or tell him to pack his locker up, turn his book into the playbook into the Turk.
Greg, I got one, but it's not happy news. I don't think we are able to afford Marcus Williams to get re-signed and extended.
That's going to be a tough one.
And I am a huge Marcus Williams fan. I think he does a lot of things that don't show up on the stat book that help the team. I think he's an excellent free safety, and I don't think we can afford him.
You know, I can see that just because, I guess, like the emergence of PJ. Like, PJ has shown up quite a few times this season. So I can actually see them maybe going in that direction to try to save some money.
Okay. I think, I'm not saying this is what I want, but I think the guy that might be a huge surprise could be Cam Jordan.
And thank you for joining this week. I want to thank all our
sponsors. I don't really believe it. Well, maybe I kind of thought that about 4 weeks ago, but I don't believe it now.
Not anymore.
No.
Can't let him leave the building after the last few games.
Cam, we have to give him a raise, man. I mean, get him up to about $30 million a year. Get him up. He's up over Jameis money now.
Make him co-defensive coordinator just so you can pay him more.
Yes, so nobody can sign him. Oh, wait. Speaking of that, we're about to lose all kind of guys, man.
That's the real guy that we're going to lose.
Okay. Allen. Well, why didn't you should have brought it up?
Dennis Allen is the guy who's gone. There's no way he is a defensive coordinator again after what a masterful performance he did this year with our defense. He's getting paid big head coach money. It's going to be in New York or Miami. But for his sake, hopefully Miami.
Dale, who's going to replace him? I don't want to put you on the spot. I know we didn't talk about this or do any homework, but I'm looking at either the defensive line coach or Zimmerman gets released over in Minnesota. Good friends with Peyton, and he is a hell of a defensive guy.
Absolutely, but I really think he's going to end up taking a year off just to recharge his battery. So I'm thinking Nielsen is going to be the guy because we stopped him from going to LSU. Being the defensive coordinator, so apparently that's what he wants to do. So you're not gonna be able to hold him back once that job comes open.
Okay. That's a good point that we went out of our way to keep him from going out of the building. There might have been a kind of a succession plan in place for that.
All right. Final thoughts, Craig.
I know that there is an instinct to be disappointed about this season because we didn't go to the playoffs and we want to be bummed about it and we want to cry into our whiskey. But with everything that was overcome and some of the craziest stuff happening this year, still winning the games we did and beating the Falcons and ending the season with a winning record, ending a winner and having the kind of hope for the future that we still do. I'm trying as hard as I can to feel positive about how it ended. And I think that we should take it with a grain of salt that, oh, we missed the playoffs, but man, we accomplished some stuff this year. And I think as fans, we should be happy about that. We should be proud of that.
I agree with you, man. The adversity that we faced and we showed some resiliency that you don't see very often. Dale.
Well, I want to go back to Taysom Hill real quick, because it was good seeing him play quarterback. It was good seeing the progression he made. But what it always comes back to is he gets hurt. He got hurt a lot at BYU. He has a very, very long injury history. So to really think he's going to be a starting quarterback for a team going forward, I just don't see it in the cards. He's a guy to come in to help you out for sure, but he can't sustain a whole season.
We are going to go into much more depth with that. Now, once it's the off season, you know, we like to recharge our batteries, but I think we'll put out a show every other week or so. But we're going to go into depth in the Taysom Hill thing, the progression that he's shown. Craig has some good insight. I have some statistics that I want to share with everyone about, you know, even Trevor Siemian, but Jameis Winston, and kind of look at the quarterback picture as a whole. So you guys check in for that. And we're going to take a little, you know, our little siesta that we usually take. Probably won't be here next week, but we'll try to get a show together for you the week after that. But anyway, yeah, I want to kind of echo what Craig said. It's the adversity that we faced and overcame. And, you know, I really would have liked to have seen the Saints make the playoffs, even though I didn't feel very strongly. I don't know. After I saw what the Rams did, I think there's the Saints could have beat them. But I didn't really have a lot of thoughts that the Saints would win. But I think it would have been an excellent reward for a team that didn't quit, to show them that if you go out there and you play hard, even through all these circumstances, to be able to be rewarded with a playoff game, get your individual, get yourself talked about on all the networks all week long, because there's only a handful of games to talk about as opposed to the entire league. I'd have liked to have seen that as a reward, but unfortunately it didn't happen. But anyway, so that's about all the show that we have for you guys. So for Craig Wright, Dale Mims, I'm Dave Romero. I'd like to also mention all the great shows over at the Dome Patrol Network, where you get a variety of shows on one feed. Tiger's Den with Scott Greenbaum, the Dome Patrol main show, Taking It Over with Billy Gunn, Premier League with Ben and James, as they said, when they decide to record it. I'm Dave Romero. You've been listening to the BS and Beer podcast, and we'll see you here in a couple of weeks.
Who that?
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back.
And that's the way it is.
Oh, boy, don't waste time to tune into our podcast. Oh, go give your time to Davey, Heath, and Thomas. We do this every week. Every Wednesday, so don't miss. We do this every week. Every Wednesday, so don't miss. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Oh, boy, don't waste time.